This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I'm grateful for your company on this Sunday afternoon. Please stay tuned, because Second Look took the week off last Sunday. We've got some catching up to do and some great stories out of the WMRA newsroom over the last couple of weeks, including a look at how families affected by autism deal with everyday life, getting to a doctor's appointment using public transportation, balancing care for a child with autism with work demands, but also for those families who can afford it, finding a vacation space that's safe and fun. Those last two stories in our autism series by WMRA's Jordy Yeager and Jesse Nadler. And Christopher Clymer-Kurtz also reports on a new service by a Harrisonburg nonprofit clinic that they hope will better serve everyone in the community, whether insured or not. But first, getting kids to eat fresh produce might seem like an uphill battle, but in Harrisonburg schools, there's some thought going into helping students know, grow, and eat their fruits and veggies. Christopher digs into that story.
It's a windy, sunny day at Waterman Elementary School in Harrisonburg, and students at recess have come to the school garden to dig in the dirt and look for worms.
Let's go over here to our finished compost and see if we can find more worms.
Harrisonburg City Schools are cultivating healthy eating habits, in part by giving students choices about what produce they eat, more on that in a moment, and getting students involved in gardening.
Okay, so
at Waterman Elementary, Kathy Yoder is a special education assistant and the school garden coordinator.
This is what our food turned into.
Wow.
This is what we add all the time to our garlic, our lettuce, and the worms are our friends. Look at all of them.
I want to touch one.
Who wants to hold one?
Oh, I want to keep this one.
Yoder has been instrumental over the last year in bringing to life the garden's 11 raised beds, improving the soil, welcoming parent and community volunteers, and heading up efforts like when students helped make spaghetti sauce last fall from the tomatoes they grew. Today in the Waterman cafeteria, students will be able to sample fresh greens from the garden. But 5-year-old Fatima isn't waiting until lunchtime.
How's it taste?
Good. I need to eat some more lettuce.
Do you eat lettuce all the time?
I didn't eat lettuce all the time because my mom didn't got lettuce.
But you're getting some here in the garden at school.
Students also help grow the food. Here's Jaden, who helps transplant 2 red beet plants to a raised bed.
One right there, one right here.
What color are they going to be if they're called red beets?
Ew. Red?
Hey, does anybody want to taste kale?
No. You remember you put strawberries over here?
This is about being part of a community that connects with its food and reduces waste. At lunch, Waterman students collect their table scraps for composting in the garden. Here's 4th grader Elliot.
You take fruits, vegetables, well, anything without dairy in it, and you put it in the gray bin, and then it all goes into the garden. It's good for the plants to help us grow all the things that we take.
Principal Jill Hart said that many students at Waterman don't garden outside of school.
It's very interesting when you start educating children and they're realizing, what do you mean potatoes grow in the ground? They don't have that background knowledge. It is not just an educational experience, but social and emotional growth as well.
Waterman's and the gardens at other schools aren't the only way the city is trying to encourage healthy eating in its young students. The new Bluestone Elementary School cafeteria offers students choices in a garden patch serving model. They get an entree and maybe a cooked vegetable option, today lima beans, but students can serve themselves from 6 fresh veggie options, as much as they'll eat, and then at the fruit bar select a couple fresh fruits from 6 options there. Bryn Smith is in 3rd grade.
So I got a chicken sandwich, and you can pick if you want the second thing.
Did you pick the lima beans?
No.
No?
And then these, you can get vegetables.
Lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers and carrots and spinach and peppers.
And this is where you get fruits.
And did you get veggies today?
Yeah, I got cucumbers and carrots.
Big pile or is it small pile?
Small.
She said having choices in this new school makes a difference, because instead of having to take a pre-selected serving of, say, carrots and tomatoes, now she can skip the tomatoes, which she might throw out, and get cucumbers instead. Her classmate Adelaide Scott likes it too.
I don't eat a lot of veggies at home, so it's just great for me that I can eat vegetables at school.
Andrea Early is the city school system's executive director of school nutrition. She said that her own observations, plus preliminary data from a 3-day study this year that compared Bluestone with another area elementary school, have indicated something very positive.
We did see a trend of kids at Bluestone taking more, putting more fruits and veggies on their tray, and also eating more and wasting less.
In coming months, she'll be crunching Bluestone's Garden Patch numbers in hopes of improving its cost effectiveness and possibly, eventually, implementing the concept in other schools, too.
When you offer this much choice, inevitably it's going to cost a little bit more. But, you know, we look at cost benefit. If we can support it from our budget and kids are eating more fruits and vegetables, well, awesome.
Back at Waterman Elementary, two students whose lunch period is just around the corner take the food scraps collected so far today, about 13 pounds of cooked corn and fresh veggies, out to the garden compost bin. They pile leaves on top, and Kathy Yoder sends them back to their recess.
Okay, that's good, guys, and I think we're gonna wrap it up here.
They will soon head to their lunch, where they just might sample the fresh lettuce from the garden they just helped feed. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
With summer around the corner, families are turning toward vacation plans, but travel for those with autism can be a challenge. In the fifth installment of our series on autism during April's Autism Awareness Month, WMRA's Jesse Nadler explores a cruise ship specifically designed for those with special needs, so the whole family can R&R together.
Amy Kerr lives in Connecticut. She has a 14-year-old daughter named Jules who's on the spectrum. Jules is high-functioning. This means she's able to communicate her needs. She attends a regular public school, and she doesn't require a lot of therapy. But trying to do Disney as a family? Forget it.
The lines were just too much for her. The heat, standing around waiting, the crowds, it was just overwhelming.
Waiting online for It's a Small World is a hellscape for anyone. But for those on the spectrum, it can be an actual sensory overload. Jules became upset.
We always get looks like, what's wrong with your kid? And she's high functioning, so we'd get even more looks like, why can't you control your kid?
It was one of those need a vacation to recover from the vacation scenarios, so the Kerr family pretty much stopped taking them. And you hear this a lot from people who have family members with developmental disabilities. Vacations end up being the opposite of relaxing. Families feel like all eyes are on them. Rachel Potter in Stanton has a 13-year-old son with autism.
Everybody's going to think I'm a bad mom because my kid's going to be kicking and screaming.
The travel industry has finally started to cater to families with autism and other special needs in the last decade or so. Autism on the Seas has been offering cruises on Royal Caribbean ships since 2007. One of many perks? All special needs families get expedited boarding, while all the typicals, the non-special needs cruisers, have to wait in long check-in lines.
We were like VIPs on board. It was an absolutely amazing experience.
Here, kids with special needs sing along to Katy Perry during an after-dinner dance party aboard the ship. The sound is from a video posted to Autism on the Seas YouTube channel. And where are the parents? They're probably enjoying respite. Moms and dads get 3.5 hours over the course of each day to themselves. Roughly 200 staffers, all trained professionals in special needs care and therapy, take charge of the kids so parents can relax. The ratio of staffers to special needs cruisers is roughly 2-1. And the kids enjoy respite too. Here's 14-year-old Jules.
My favorite thing to do on board the ship is probably respite after dinner every night. I get to hang out with all my friends and the staff members that are all really great and friendly, and it gives my parents some nice relaxation time, and I really enjoy seeing them relaxed.
And for families such as Amy Kerr's and Rachel Potter's, this is Autism on the Seas' ace in the hole. It's a cruise for special needs families, sure, but it's also a reset for exhausted parents. Rachel Potter.
Then your kid says, you know, they got to go to the bathroom. And you've just sat down with your glass of wine, right, as the parent. And the staff member says, oh, Rachel, you sit down. It's okay. Sally and I will take him. And you're like, what? You mean I get to sit here and drink my glass of wine? And somebody else is going to wipe his butt? Are you kidding me? It is. I mean, you have parents at the end of these cruises who, when they're saying goodbye to staff, are weeping.
Here's the sound of a special needs child learning to boogie board on a giant wave simulator on the ship. is also from the organization's YouTube channel. The child is assisted by three staffers as his family proudly looks on. The closest port is in Norfolk. Rates are customary cruise rates plus about $30 per person per day. Families tend to book trips again and again. Some parents are so touched by the experience, they end up volunteering on trips, like Rachel Potter. Amy Kerr actually works for Autism on the Seas. Her family has cruised three times. Jules is gearing up for a fourth.
I hope to cruise to Europe next.
For WMRA News, I'm Jessie Nadler.
But not everyone can afford vacation cruise, and for those families affected by autism on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, just dealing with daily family chores can be especially challenging. In our last story in the series, WMRA's Jordy Yeager takes a look at the many challenges facing parents, from housing to employment to transportation, and where they find hope.
It's a Friday in Charlottesville, and Natasha Lee is dropping her son off at school. Natasha's son is 9. He has autism and doesn't speak. The dentist, she explains, was a bust. He never quite calmed down. And that's not unusual for parents of children with autism. Whether it's repeat visits to the dentist, teenage diapers, or putting alarms on doors, parents have to adapt to a new normal. And that new normal looks really different depending on how much money you have. If, for instance, you don't own a car, appointments for kids with autism don't take 30 minutes, they take hours. And if you ride the public bus like Natasha and her son, those appointments can take a whole day and involve a lot of time in public.
He used to like pull people's hair and take their glasses and stuff, so I try to sit all the way in the back. And he yells a lot on the bus too, so sometimes I'd be scared that they're going to kick me off the bus.
It's exhausting to always explain your son's behavior, she says. A car not only would save them time, it would give them privacy. And then there's work. Natasha has a job that works around her son's needs, but it pays below the living wage it takes to survive on your own in Charlottesville. And that leads to one of the biggest challenges, how to get her son an in-home caregiver.
They would like help with him at home while I get things done, because it's hard when you're there, because his dad goes to work and stuff, and when it's just us there, sometimes it's hard to do things. Like, it's hard for me to do things with my daughter, like help her with her homework and stuff like that.
Parents can get a Medicaid waiver, which uses federal money to pay for the care of people with autism. But it's limited, and it only pays in-home caregivers $8 to $9 an hour. Wealthier parents bump that up to $15 an hour, with cash under the table. But for moms on a budget, that's not possible. Tisha Allen knows that struggle. Her 12-year-old son also has autism, and to get the Medicaid waiver, she got runaround after runaround. Call social services, she heard.
So I would call social service, and then it's like, no, you have to call the health department. Okay, call the health department. No, you're supposed to call Region 10. Call Region 10. No, you're supposed to call your doctor. You call the doctor, and they're like, what? No, you're supposed to talk to social service. And I'm like, you know what?
And that's where Hillary Nagel comes in. Hillary is a clinical social worker at the Virginia Institute of Autism and works as its family resource navigator.
My position is to be a supportive listener, to hear how this is impacting the family, the questions that they might have, and then to really provide as much information about next steps, and to do that at a pace that feels good to the family. And with all that information, then they are able to make the best choices for how best to support their child.
Hillary's helped Natasha and Tisha and dozens of other parents navigate the complex web of information, and that helps a lot. But it's not just the logistics, Tisha explains. It's the emotional exhaustion and isolation. Sometimes she thinks about parents whose children don't have autism.
You don't know how thankful you might be that you might have to pick up Junior's socks just because he left them in the floor, versus I'm going to have to figure out how, when he gets older, is he going to let me shave his face? You know, what's going to happen when he goes through puberty? What is going to happen? To him, to me, what happens to him if something happens to me? How do I know if he's in pain? It's so many things that come to you, and it's so scary. And if you're by yourself, it's like, it's not a lot of resources in the area.
For the last two decades, VIA has held a 5K race to benefit people with autism. People run, they cheer, dance. It's a great communal feeling. But if you have to work on a Saturday, you can't afford a caregiver, you have to take public transportation, or you just don't feel comfortable in that setting, that day is not for you. So VIA tries to make other options available, like a 3-day parenting class that Natasha did last year.
It's really helpful because I was actually around other parents that had different stories about what they have to deal with at home, too. And it's like, I can relate. I just felt like I was at home when I was there.
And home can be another challenge for parents of kids with autism, especially if you rent.
Yeah, we actually had to move because he went through a stumping stage where he stumped and we were living upstairs from a neighbor. And we had too many complaints.
They moved to the other side of town where neighbors have been better, but now they have mold in their house. And the battle with landlords is never ending. Like not being able to mount a TV on the wall to prevent it from being knocked over, or installing upper locks on a door that can't be reached by younger kids. Natasha has applied with Habitat for Humanity to build her own house. It's a long process, likely years, but she's excited because the financial possibilities could be life-changing. It would also mean small things, like being able to paint the bathroom another color, her daughter's room too, but especially her son's room. He may be nonverbal, but he's incredibly visual, and colors would paint a more vivid future. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Support for WMRA special series Autism in Virginia comes from Paul Obaugh Ford & Lincoln, a family-owned dealership for more than 50 years, in Stanton on Lee Jackson Highway or at obaugh.com.
And you can find out much more about our entire series on autism at WMRA.org. The Harrisonburg Community Health Center serves a diverse community and now also offers prenatal care for women, including those who are undocumented and uninsured. Christopher Clymer-Kurtz visited the center and filed this report.
According to Ann Schaefer, about 4 out of every 10 babies born at Sentara RMH Medical Center in Harrisonburg receive their pediatric care here at the Harrisonburg Community Health Center. And so it makes sense that the center has added prenatal care to its services. Not to be confused with the health department or the free clinic, the not-for-profit health center is one of about 1,400 federally qualified health centers across the country that deliver care, quote, in areas where economic, geographic, or cultural barriers limit access to affordable health care services. The appointment numbers here in Harrisonburg?
It's just gone through the roof. I think we saw 16,000 patient appointments in 2016. We saw over 30,000 in 2017. And I think we are on track to totally shoot right past that for 2018.
Schaefer is a certified nurse midwife who has worked for nearly 2 decades in private and public health settings, including for the last year and a half at the health center, which serves anyone who needs their help.
I thought I knew my community really well before I came to work here, but I'm realizing that even as open as I felt like my eyes might have been, that I have become so much more amazed by and proud of the diversity we have here, but also very much more aware of the challenges people face.
The center's main site is on Port Republic Road, but it also has clinics at the Virginia Mennonite Retirement Community and in Elkton. It offers family, pediatric, and women's health care, dental and behavioral health services, and more to anyone at all, with or without insurance, with or without documented immigration status, English-speaking or not. Its staff interpreters speak Spanish, Arabic, Kurdish, Tigrinya, and Russian, and its sliding fee scale for medical care goes as low as $10 per visit. Schaefer said that patients range from attorneys to new refugees and her own family and mother. Federal grants cover $1.6 million of the center's annual $8.3 million budget, with the balance coming from patient revenue and donations. Side note here, Schaefer is hopeful that Medicaid expansion will pass in Virginia because it would help people who now fall in the gap, and because for each Medicaid patient a federally qualified health center sees, it receives an extra subsidy. More Medicaid patients means more funding for the health center's services.
Anytime we take care of somebody with Medicaid or with private health insurance, that's probably funding 1 or 2 or 3 other patients who are on our sliding fee scale to be able to get care. If we have a population that reflects our community here in Harrisonburg, that is kind of the best case scenario.
And now that scenario can include women seeking prenatal care. That's a big deal, Schaefer said.
There are very few things that affect the well-being of a family as much as the care they receive around childbearing.
The Harrisonburg Community Health Center is not the only or first federally qualified health center in the region to provide prenatal care. Other similar health centers in Lexington, Farmville, and Winchester also offer such services. But until now in the Harrisonburg area, access to conventional prenatal care for women without insurance or who are undocumented has been less than ideal. They would go to the health department for a single intake appointment and a referral to a participating obstetrics provider for prenatal visits and hospital birth services. Then, after the birth, they could return to the health department for a single postpartum visit and to be, as Schaefer put it, quote, released back into the wild to hopefully find their way back to their primary care provider. That system, with its many opportunities for missed care, is replaced by the health center's prenatal services. The health center is partnering with Harrisonburg OBGYN, a private practice that will provide in-hospital services at the time of delivery at Sentara RMH, with the health center providing care before and after birth.
We will really be doing newborn care for that baby in utero all the way through. So then we will actually have a really good feel for the mother's history and the family's history. We will already know about that baby before the actual physical baby is carried back through our doors. So it'll be really good care for people in our community who are often falling through the cracks.
That includes new mothers. Schaefer said that the continuity of the health center services will make it more likely that women's postpartum needs will be addressed. The health center's prenatal care will soon include bringing together women who are due around the same time for centering and topical discussions in a deliberately relaxed, non-exam room setting with fun and snacks.
Prenatal care is a state of wellness, so we don't need to treat every woman like she's sick when she's pregnant.
Those groups, Schaefer said, will build important community among expectant mothers. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg in Rockingham County. All our stories are archived at WMRA.org. If you'd like to support our ability to produce them, go to that website, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. In the meantime, to get a daily local news update on your smartphone every weekday morning, subscribe to our news podcast, the WMRA Daily. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.